Well, Governor Kristi Noem gave her budget address yesterday. And, you know, kind of laid out ahead of this year's legislative session, you know, her wishes and her direction, where she's going. Her plan includes 5% increases for education, state workers. And among the things that many of us have been watching are the elimination of sales tax on groceries. And the governor said that eliminating that sales tax on groceries is the biggest way in my budget that we can help South Dakotans tackle the challenge of Joe Biden's inflation and protect our hard-earned money. She said, unfortunately, food costs have risen by far too much. Families are struggling to make ends meet as a result of that. So because of the permanent growth in state revenue, she said that will more than make up for the lost grocery tax. You know, you and I have talked about this previously, and I think the thought that goes through my head is, you know, I'm all in favor of eliminating those taxes. And there's a way, you know, municipalities have expressed concern as to whether or not then they're going to be touched by that. And the governor has said, nope. The sales tax on food by municipalities will stand. That will not be affected. This would only be the state sales tax on food. So depending on where you live as to whether or not your local municipality has enacted an increase, a tax on groceries, it will depend. My concern, and it was echoed by some of our callers as we've talked about this, is that, okay, then let's assume we get into rough times ahead and the state has got money now. What's going to happen when the state runs into much, much tougher times? Are we going to see then other taxes that wind up being levied as a result? That's always my concern. Because generally you don't see governments that are giving up, and I'm all in favor of this, but generally we don't see governments that are in favor of giving up revenue. They've still got to be able to fund. They've got employees that they've got to be able to fund, so on. Services, very essential services. So, yeah, we'll see how this, we'll see what happens during this upcoming session of the legislature. But the governor is trying to certainly, I think, soothe our concerns, because she said even after this tax cut, we will have $208 million that will be available to us to meet the needs that the state government is responsible for. We have been exceeding estimates by about $25 million per month. The people of South Dakota overwhelmingly want this tax cut, and they know that we can afford it. I would agree. I don't know that there has ever been a better time than there is right now. But I've grown so damn skeptical. Do you feel that way too? Just increasingly skeptical about if it's not this, then what's going to wind up happening in the event the state is, yeah, state's got money now. Does anybody think that's going to last? I don't know that I do, and I think a lot of that is due to my skepticism rather than, you know, trying to be critical here of the governor or of our legislature. So governor also said she would pay to expand Medicaid. She said the federal government incentivizes states to implement Medicaid by subsidizing costs the first few years. And she said, after that, the burden is going to fall on the state. And she talked about the cost then for Medicaid expansion. The first year would be $66 million. The state's responsibility will be $13 million because the rest would be covered by the federal government. In the second year, the cost will be $70 million, and the state will pay $16 million of that. So she says the program could cost more than $80 million after 5 years. So these are among the things that she talked about in her budget address yesterday. And I think, is it fair to say that sales tax on groceries probably on the minds of many of us as to what you and I might be watching most closely would be that sales tax on groceries? So the governor has been an advocate for eliminating that sales tax on groceries. And we'll see what happens and how that's going to play out in the upcoming legislative session. It's difficult to ignore what's going on with Twitter. That continues to be a big story this morning. Elon Musk has fired now the deputy general counsel of Twitter, James Baker, in part because he played a role in suppressing information, Elon Musk says, important to the public dialogue. He was exited from Twitter today. Musk tweeted this yesterday. Musk said that he questioned Baker about his recent, this is before he fired him. He questioned Baker about the events surrounding the laptop suppression scandal, you know, the New York Post, that whole thing, his role in that. And he said the lawyer's explanation was unconvincing. I'll tell you what is convincing is, you know, as you begin digging into this, I mentioned this earlier this week, and if you were watching the release of the Twitter files by Elon Musk, is there were a couple of independent journalists then that Elon Musk had been using to go through those files and then disseminate that information to the public as to what was going on at Twitter. Two reporters, Matt Taibbi, who is an independent journalist. Matt Taibbi is one. And the other is Barry Weiss. And Barry Weiss said, now we're learning that there was, if you were like me, because I was kind of hanging, waiting for the Twitter files to drop on Friday night. And which they did then start Friday night into Saturday, into the weekend. Well, Barry Weiss is now saying that one of the reasons is what was going on with Jim Baker. And so Taibbi is saying, you know, we can tell you part of the reason why this took so long that on Friday night to start releasing this information. He said, on Tuesday, Twitter Deputy General Counsel, that's Jim Baker, was fired. Among the reasons, vetting the first batch of Twitter files without acknowledgement of new management. So in other words, these files were going to Baker, and he was vetting them then before they were being released to the public, and he did that without the knowledge of Elon Musk, which to me is incredible. So he's doing all that without the knowledge of Elon Musk. And so, well, of course he was fired. Wow. For most of us, it's like, yeah, no brainer. Okay, you got somebody who's out there. And then it gets worse. It gets worse. The more that you learn, Taibbi said that Barry Weiss was also involved in reviewing these social media, Twitter's files, the internal Twitter documents. So Barry Weiss was also responsible for this, relating to the Post and the Hunter Biden story, because that's where the focus was at initially. As I told you yesterday, you know, the information that Twitter was releasing were focusing on Joe Biden prior to the time that he became president. And, you know, as you and I, we move forward now, we'll start learning about the involvement of the Biden administration directly now with Twitter. And we'll see what that is, I think, in weeks and ahead coming up. But so this information was going through Jim Baker, and Barry Weiss talks about this. She said, why was this so slow? For those of you who are watching it on Friday night, it was painfully slow trying to get these files out. They're just like waiting. You spent a lot of time waiting. And so Barry Weiss said, she was wondering why it was so slow. And she said she discovered that the person in charge of releasing the files was someone named Jim. So she called to ask, well, who's Jim? What's Jim's last name? Jim Baker. And Weiss says her jaw hit the floor. So here you've got Jim Baker, who was, you know, inserting himself right in the midst of Elon Musk trying to release that information publicly, and Baker taking it upon himself to get in the midst of that. Now, again, he was, in fairness, he was Twitter's deputy general counsel. Many had been asking, how in the world is this guy still employed at Twitter prior to this? Like, how in the world is this guy still there? Well, he's not any longer. And you see his actions here. It's going to be amazing. He's been asked about it, but he has not commented yet. I think it's going to be just absolutely, I can't wait to hear the lies that are going to start coming out of his mouth when he's asked about what it is he was doing in the midst of all this. So here we have the CEO, Elon Musk, making that. I understand, you know, I think you could understand that if Elon Musk wanted his lawyer's opinion as to the release of this information, would he not be able to ask for it rather than Baker inserting himself into that whole situation? So here you've got the CEO of Twitter trying to release this information and Baker getting in the way. It's like, wow. And I'm like, he was fired? Well, duh. And that story's huge. And again, the state legacy media's kind of non-reaction to this story, you'd never know. Honestly. New York Post got criticized going into the weekend New York Times. New York Times was criticized on the fact that they weren't covering the story. And it wasn't until they started getting a lot of heat well into the weekend that they started giving the story any coverage at all. This is why the media just has got no credibility in the minds of so many Americans, I think. Certainly in my mind. I don't trust the legacy media. So this story is just huge, and I want to make sure that you heard it, that you are aware of it, that you know what's going on. You make your own decision. I'm very comfortable with that. But what we saw happening here is just incredible. I look forward to hearing Jim Baker's explanation as to why he took it upon himself to insert himself in what Elon Musk was doing here. Because, as I mentioned, you know, Elon Musk, you want a lawyer's opinion, certainly easy enough to get one. Just incredible watching all of this going on. And then you get the reaction. You know, one of the things I really have not shared a lot with you is the reaction from Twitter in response to all these things happening. And I'm talking about Twitter users like me, other Twitter users. And they're melting down. They are in absolute meltdown. And I just don't care. I've got to believe you probably don't either. You know, I just don't care. They're gonna melt down about one thing or another. You and I see it all the time. They're melting down over what's that, and some of the comments are the dumbest, most insipid kind of comments in reaction to this. And I thought, I just don't want to waste your time with that. That is noise. And there's so much of that noise, it becomes a distraction. And between the noise, the screaming, the belly aching, the, you know, stomping of feet, then you get the suppression by the legacy media of a lot of things that are happening. So being able to actually even know and be aware of these things, I think is challenging enough. Certainly is for me, and I do this for a living. And I find it very, very challenging to try to find this information and put it together in a way that I hope you can, you know, you can at least understand what's going on, digest it, and then arrive at your own conclusions and, you know, your own thoughts as to what's going on. But the firing of this lawyer, Jim Baker, I think is huge. And again, the Fox News has got a story this morning. There's a lot of reaction to the, and I shared this piece with you yesterday by Jonathan Turley. I have great respect and admiration for Jonathan Turley, who is an opinion writer at the New York Post. He's a professor at George Washington University. He is a constitutional attorney. The guy is well-versed in a lot of these, and he's a liberal Democrat. And he has talked about what it is that's ongoing. He sees it, is reported on it. And so Fox News has been covering, they talked to Brent Bozell over at the Media Research Center, getting his reaction to a lot of this and the scandal. It's just absolutely incredible. So this story has just been huge. If there are significant developments as a result of this, we'll see them. But Twitter is taking substantial steps here, again, to try to restore their credibility, and they did so yesterday by firing Jim Baker. And the more we learn about Jim Baker, frankly, the more chilling it becomes, I think. That's a big piece of news. Also coming up, there's video of the death of a Home Depot worker, an 83-year-old Home Depot worker who was trying to stop a guy who was shoplifting, and he was killed. And, you know, the amount of violence and the lack of prosecutions, that's also a big story. I'll share details about that with you coming up here in just a few moments. Well, I was just heartbroken by this story this Home Depot worker who tried to stop a robbery. Do you see this? This has been in the news for several days. It's a man, he's 83 years old. Gary Rasser. And he's 83 years old, works at Home Depot. And there was a guy that was trying to, he was stealing, you know, it was going out the door. He had three pressure washers. These are worth about, I think, a total of $500 of pressure washers that this guy had. And so this Home Depot worker, you know, tries to stop him from heading out the door. And the guy just belts this man, bam, bam, down he goes and hits his head. And he wound up dying as a result of his injuries. It killed him. And there's video of it, and it's honestly, it's shocking. It's sad. It's now beyond that, because again, that story I think is newsworthy, just simply for what happened to this man, this Home Depot employee. Just absolutely incredible. So as if that's not enough, we have the CEO of Walmart, who has been in the news talking about what's going on with shoplifters and the lack of prosecution of shoplifters. And he said that a lax approach from prosecutors could impact prices and lead to store closures down the line. So do you understand this? There is so much theft, shoplifting, so much theft that is occurring in these retail stores that unless more is done, it's going to mean Walmart's going to be closing stores as a result. That's what they're talking about. Because prosecutors are not pursuing these cases. And he said, if that's not corrected over time, prices will be higher and stores will close, he said. And it's really city by city, location by location. He said it's store managers working with local law enforcement, and we've got great relationships there for the most part. You know, I'm a big fan of local law enforcement. It's not local law enforcement is not where the failure is occurring. The failure is occurring with prosecutors in a number of cities where they refuse to go after, and it's like, oh, now we're, you know, very kind of forward thinking. This is the way it's presented to you and me. Very progressive, forward thinking. That we're not going to be prosecuting those crimes. And it leads to more of this kind of thing. So unless whether you're a fan of Walmart or not, whether you shop at Walmart or not, I don't think that's relevant. What we're talking about is the breakdown of law and order, which you and I talk about all the time. And so as you see the breakdown then of law and order occur, you get more of these cases. You know, I don't want to predict that we're going to see more employees like this Home Depot worker, Gary Rasser. You know, I don't want to predict that we're going to see more of those kinds of things happen, but I definitely fear that we will see more of those things happen. If we don't start getting a handle on enforcing laws, it's absolutely incredible. And again, I do not blame in any way. I do not blame law enforcement for this. It's not the fault of law enforcement. This is a lot of communities. It's a fault of prosecutors. And I'm not suggesting this is occurring in our local community. You know, looking at this problem nationwide, and that's what you're hearing then from the CEO of Walmart, you know, saying that, yeah, unless he said we've got safety measures, security measures that we put in place by store location. And he said, I think local law enforcement being staffed and being a good partner is part of that equation. And that's normally how we approach it. But he says a lax approach from prosecutors could impact prices and lead to store closures down the line. So as a result of this, and this is why we have seen stores that have said, yeah, we don't want, it's not profitable to be in these locations. And then have you seen in some of these, there was a story, was not all that long ago, about Walgreens, and it was closing in San Francisco. And it's like, it's, you know, the neighborhoods in San Francisco, we just can't, you know, it's not profitable. It's not profitable to be there. And then you get these city boards that say, we want to force them. We're going to force them to be open if we can. Or respond in any way that we can to penalize them for pulling out of our community. It's like, well, the first thing you can do is enforce law and order. You know, that's always a great step. You want to have more businesses who find your community attractive? You want to appeal to more people? Law enforcement's a great way to do it. I think that has been one of the strengths of Sioux Falls, has been, and not just Sioux Falls. When I say Sioux Falls, I'm talking about this area. Really, it's not just Sioux Falls. It is law enforcement in our area, whether it's in Sioux Falls or Sioux Falls, certainly, because this is where you got such a concentration of people. When Sioux Falls is now the largest city in two counties, you know, it's seen remarkable growth over time. But it's certainly true of law enforcement, I think, within the sound of my voice. You know, whether you're in southwest Minnesota or southeast Iowa, law enforcement, I think, is just, I appreciate them so much, and more now than ever, when you see this kind of thing happening. And then this, did you see the video of this 83-year-old Home Depot worker? It's like, wow. For three pressure washers, totaling, I think, less, the value on that was like just over $500 for those three pressure washers. And there are just so many communities, and this is, it's just heartbreaking when we see stories like this happen. What happened to this Home Depot worker? So it's, but we've got to understand, you know, this is what happens when law enforcement breaks down, when this is a breakdown of our society on so many levels. It's one of the reasons why, not spending a lot of time this morning talking about the election down in Georgia, certainly a big story, Raphael Warnock winning that race over Herschel Walker for Senate down in Georgia. That's a big story this morning, but that story is eclipsed, in my opinion, by these other things that we see happening all throughout our society. And when you have workers who on the job who, you know, trying to stop theft and just by placing, I mean, I watched a video. The man puts a hand on the cart trying to stop this guy from just heading out the door and just bam, knocks him down to the ground, hits his head. It's like, what? 83 years old? I mean, who does that? That's a problem I have. But the, And I think where I was going was to say this could just as easily, I was talking about the dollar amount of those power washers, little over $500. I'm betting it could have easily been over $5 that something like that would happen. The lack of respect that so many people have for life, for the property of others, it's just like absolutely incredible. So that story is, you know, again, the death of that Home Depot employee is shocking and sad enough. But then when you look at what's happening on a larger issue with the shoplifting and what it's doing to companies, how it's impacting prices then for you and me, because we all pay for this, sadly, some with our lives. But you know, we all pay for this kind of thing and this breakdown, and it's not coming from police. Police are doing their jobs. It's prosecutors in some communities who are absolutely dropping that ball. Thanks so much for letting me join you. Coming up, we will visit with Iowa Senator Joni Ernst. She will join us here shortly. She'll join us in a few minutes. She's got a number of things going on. Farm bill hearing that she was part of yesterday, so we'll visit with her about that and a number of other things. And I've got to ask her about the comments by Senator Tom Cotton on Senator Cotton responding to woke CEOs who then run to Republicans and they're trying to escape regulation by the Democrats, and then they come running to Republicans. And basically, Senator Cotton said, I'll say this, I'm sorry that's happening to you. Best of luck. He's saying to these woke CEOs. So that caught my attention. It's a great reaction. And again, I stand there and I go, yeah, well, it's about time. Absolutely. Totally understand. We'll get to a lot more meaningful issues also coming up with Senator Joni Ernst. So she'll join us shortly. We will talk to Jim Olander of the Sioux Falls Stampede. Jim was very gracious this morning in order to make time for that conversation with Senator Ernst. We will talk to Jim coming up at about 8:35. So I'll talk to Jim Olander 8:35 this morning, and he's got good news. It's been a good week for that. They had a great week. So he'll tell us about it in more detail also on the way. Big story this morning, as you heard, Governor Kristi Noem delivering her budget address to state lawmakers yesterday and talking about increases. Her plan includes 5% increases for education and for state workers, and also includes relief at the grocery store. She said eliminating the sales tax on groceries is the biggest way in my budget that we can help South Dakotans tackle the challenge of Joe Biden's inflation and protect their hard-earned money, she said. Unfortunately, food costs have risen by far too much. Families are struggling to make ends meet as a result of that. And then she talked about permanent revenues that the state has. She said the state has $310 million in permanent revenue growth, and that will make up for the grocery tax. She said, we still, even after this cut, will have $208 million that will be available to us to meet the needs that state government is responsible for. We have been exceeding estimates by about $25 million per month, she said. The people of South Dakota overwhelmingly want this tax cut and they know that we can afford it, she said. And I agree. I you and I have talked about that tax cut previously, and as to whether or not you would favor it and you think it's a good idea. And what's happened is so many of us have become skeptical, and I absolutely understand and get it. You know, so many of us have become skeptical. It's like, okay, then what are they going to raise then? Or, okay, even if they don't raise additional taxes, then immediately what happens as time goes on? And you know, what we see is, you know, the growth of government. And I understand that. I have that in the back of my mind, too. But saving folks money at the grocery store, I think, is eliminating that food tax. So I know I've seen questions in regard to that, because there was as to whether that would simply be state money, because municipalities also then, for instance, like in Sioux Falls, for example, not all municipalities, but some municipalities in a community like Sioux Falls, where you have, you know, you're trying to fund a number of services as the city does, whether or not then that decrease in the, you know, the elimination of the food tax was going to impact cities. Now, the governor has said it will not. It will not do so. Those portions would remain in place under the proposal that she's got. That would remain in place. So cities like Sioux Falls, others than that also charge the food tax, will not see that. So this would affect only the state's portion of the food tax revenue. And again, I understand being skeptical. You know, you and I have talked about this previously, and, you know, we've had callers that have said that they're just worried about what increases, because this is how government operates it, not necessarily at the state level, but we certainly see it at the federal level. You know, okay, yeah, we're going to reduce this tax, by the way. And then we're over here raising these taxes to offset that. I understand that kind of skepticism about government. And honestly, I feel that's a healthy kind of attitude. Don't you? I mean, honestly, because the money is yours and mine. And how we spend it, you know, how much of it we get to keep, especially now as the governor is talking about the challenges of the economy right now, the challenges of inflation right now, what it's doing for families at the grocery store, and how it's impacting your ability to be able to buy food for your family, so on, and to make ends meet. Is really significant right now. So if you're going to eliminate the food tax in the state, it certainly seems like this is a great time to do it. So Mike Derby of Rapid City said, speaking to the governor's speech, he said, "The keynote of her speech had to do with the repeal of the sales tax on food and groceries. That will be approximately $102 million. So that leaves about $208 million in ongoing revenue. And then there's a $216 million in one-time funds that will be used for big projects such as upgrading software for state government," he said. So it'll be interesting to see the reaction of lawmakers. The Kibbleland TV had a comment from Reynold Nesiba of Sioux Falls. He's a Democrat. Nesiba said that he's looking forward to working with the governor on this. said the governor brought forward three things today that have been Democratic priorities for years. The first time I was ever in this building was to advocate for eliminating the sales tax on food. And he said, I've been working on that since 2004. I'm optimistic that we can get that done this year. So it'll be interesting to see the response from lawmakers, what they may wind up doing as a result of this. So we'll see. Noam mentioned the eliminating the sales tax on groceries is the biggest way that she hopes the budget will support, you know, South Dakotans as you're trying to make ends meet. So pretty significant comments yesterday by Governor Kristi Noem as she was talking about the elimination of the food tax in South Dakota and how she hopes to make that happen.